Good morning. We are going to be finishing chapter 22, Perichav Bet, today. We are up to Pasuk Yud Bet, which can be found on page 144 in our packets. Verse 12. This chapter was discussing, up until this point, the king, Shaul, who was extremely disappointed at one of his servants, actually in an entire city of Nob, for not turning in a wanted criminal by the name of David. That David went to this city, a city of Kohanim, and was given provisions, bread. He was actually even given a sword. He was armed by them, gave him weapons. They also allowed him to use the Urim v'Tumim. Apparently, at least according to the explanation of Doeg, who was there, one of Shoel's trusted soldiers, was observing this entire thing in the city of Nob. And he said, obviously the reason why he's getting a sword is because he wants to arm himself to fight against you. And we already know at the beginning of this parak that as he's running, he's not running by himself. He's running with many other people. Now he has as many as approximately 400 men that are following with him, building up a small little army, and it's getting bigger and bigger. And as his army gets bigger, he is going to pose a greater threat to the king, to Shaul. And therefore, Shaul is making a very strong statement that any person that supports him, anyone who does not turn him in, will be punished. And the punishment will be death, as we're now going to see. Doeg gave this explanation in starting from verse 9, Pasuk Tet, exactly what he saw transpire in the city of Nob, which we said was on a Shabbos, and he was given all these wonderful things, and because of this, the Kohen in charge of the city, by the name of Achimelech, is being summoned to the king. We're up to Pasuk Yud Bet. Vayomer Shaul. So Shaul said, Shema na ben Achitov. Please listen, ben Achitov. He doesn't even mention the great Kohen's name, Achimelech, by name, because as it's brought down in the Radak, it's done derech bezayon. If you don't even want to mention the guy's name, it shows that you're trying to humiliate them, that you can't even acknowledge them by name. He did that by his son. Right, so we pointed out last week, he did that by his son. He also certainly does this in numerous occasions to David. He calls him Ben Yishai. We mentioned last week, maybe when it comes to your son, not always do you have to name your child by name. Just if you say, my son, my daughter, that could actually be a sign of endearment. But we know that really, maybe he wasn't saying it in that fashion. Maybe he was also doing it derech bezayon because his children were turning against him and showing support to David. So probably it's exactly the same reason. So please come and listen to me, Ben Achitov, you king, that you are Kohen. Ve'yomer, and he said, Hine Adoni, I'm here. I'm here to serve you. I'm here to do whatever you want me to do, my master. Ve'yomer Elav, so he said to him, Ve'yomer Elav Shaul. Shaul was obviously extremely disappointed in this Kohen, in Achimelech, and he asked them the question, Lama kishartem olai? Why do you kishartem, as Mesudas Sion translates, in agudas anoshet, attaching oneself to other people? Why do you attach yourself to other people against me? Ato ben Yishai, you apparently have a great rapport, relationship with this David character. And don't say you don't give him anything. Don't say you care about him. I know that you've done things for him in the past. Instead of turning him into me, this man who's wanted dead or alive, you gave him lechem bread, the cherev, and you gave him a very sharp sword, and you allowed him to utilize our holy equipment, our advanced technology of the Urim and Tumim, which is able to determine the future of what he should do. And what I know why he went to the Urim and Thummim. I know why he used those things. It must be Lakuma Eli L'Orev Kayom Hazeh. It's in order for him to learn when he should stand up against me to ambush me on such and such a day, on this day. So, as we mentioned, the power of Lashon Hara. Some of it was true. It is true that Achimelech ben Achitov did give David bread. It is true that he also gave him a sword. But, first of all, David was starving to death. Gave him food. The guy was going to die in front of him. What are you going to do? You're going to let some guy starve to death. Second of all, as we're going to see in the next psukim, the Kohen had no idea that there was anything wrong over here. In fact, David, who was related son-in-law to the king, who would have thought that he was his own father-in-law would want him to be killed, to be turned in, that he was he broke some type of a law. And for him to utilize the Urim v'Tumim, who says it was L'kum Eli L'Orev Kiyom HaZeh, to ambush me, to plot some type of waging of a war against the king? He comes all the time. He used to come frequently to Nov Ir HaKohanim to be able to connect himself to that particular place. So the fact that he went to the Urim v'Tumim again doesn't necessarily prove anything. But the way that Doeg painted the picture, he gave the impression that, in fact, David was doing this for a specific reason and that he was plotting to kill Shaul, even though it wasn't true. But that's the power of Lashon Hara. A person can take partial truths, as we said last week, and make it look as though it's the whole truth. And that, as we said, was the ultimate level of Sheker. Sheker is focusing on the small aspects, small part of all the facts, as the letters Kuf Reish Shin and the word Sheker are written right next to each other, as opposed to MS, which is the Aleph, Mem, and the Sof, the beginning, middle, the end. You have to give the whole perspective. And that's certainly dug into. And therefore, because he only spoke, he spoke in a way, and packaged it in a way which gave the impression that he was out to protect and save David, because of this, the very life of Achimelech and the entire city of Nob is going to be in grave danger, in jeopardy. Okay.
I just noticed
Ishatim
is the same shoresh. It's the same words. I mean, it's the same words, backwards. Sheker. Sheker and Ishatim mentioned something.
Wow. Very good.
Is it interesting that he,
very nice,
that he claimed that he gave him the Cherev of Goliath?
What was that?
That
was
very,
right. So to the king, he hears, why is he doing this, giving this particular sword? It must be that, you know, this is a sword of war, and he's going to show how powerful he is. So anyone he walks around with this sword, everyone's going to be scared to mess with him because he's going to walk in and want to kill me.
No, it's who he wanted, Cherev Goliath.
Right.
So he's taking over Goliath's role.
Okay. Oh, that he's going to be attacking the
there's
Jewish people
ways.
As.
One, you could say that the Kohen gave him because he deserved it, or that's
right.
The
right.
Other hand, the way he can interpret it is he gave him the
purpose of the show.
Right. Yeah. Right. But again, when it comes to Lashon Hara, it's not saying all the facts. He didn't go into some weapon store and he said, oh, let's take that sword over there. There was no other swords. There was nothing left.
It's the interpretation.
Right. So the way that it was mentioned, it gave the impression that, the sword of Goliath. Happened to me that was the only sword around. Okay.
But does that imply that if you tell the whole story, it's not Lashon Hara? Is the inverse or converse of that? So? I wouldn't think so. I mean, if you told the whole story, is it still considered Lashon Hara?
It depends how you suffer. You can tell the whole story to someone, and if that someone wants to hear something negative in the story, they're going to find that word that will turn the whole thing into a
negative. Okay, yeah, but what Vivian is asking, it
yes,
doesn't matter if it's true or not.
No, it doesn't.
No, but I mean, right. The way I'm hearing it is because he didn't tell the whole story, he just told a part of it's Lashon Hara. So that's why right. I'm asking you. Does it get enlarged from that point to say, well, if he told the whole story in every little detail, is it not Lashon Hara?
Well, the way that I was explaining it is that Lashon Hara is Lashon Hara. But the manipulation of speech of Lashon Hara is focusing on usually one aspect of a human being and not looking at the whole picture. But in the event that you're still not allowed to speak Lashon Hara, of course. But that's
the... If you told the whole story, maybe this would have happened.
If you told the whole story, then what?
It would have been Lashon Hara, it wouldn't have happened.
I think it would have happened because at this kind of show, it was so paranoid with David and what he was, what he thought he was going to do. All these other examples before this, I think it would have happened.
And then he's crazy.
Right. So forgetting about the situation of Shaul, his personal, his own issues, but if you would speak the whole truth to someone who was rational, then maybe they would have said, oh, okay. You're right. So the fact that you say partial truths is, when you're dealing to a rational person, then they'll have be misconstrued. You say all the facts, then you're like, you know what, okay, I'm not going to jump to conclusions. But someone like Shaul, as we see over here, is certainly looking for any excuse to kill whoever he can. And if he can't kill David, he's going to kill anyone that helped him along the way, including innocent Kohan, innocent priests.
Including his parents?
It wasn't him that killed him, but it was Melech Moab. As we said, maybe the reason why the king of Moab wiped them out is because of what's happening here. That if he would have protected his parents, then maybe the king of Moab and his family would be wiped out from Shaul. So he felt forced to react in that way, possibly. Okay. All right. Let's move on to the next Pasuk Gedalin, Bayan. Can you imagine? He knows that if he doesn't come up with a great answer right here, he's a dead man. Bayan Achimelech es Hamelech vayomar. So Achimelech turned to Shaul and he said, he probably begging on his hands and knees, Umi b'chol avadecha k'david ne'eman. Out of all the servants in the world that I can think of, is there any servant that is trustworthy and is cared for as much as David? B'chasan ha-melech. He also happens to be related to you somehow, king. He happens to be your son-in-law. Some mother-in-laws may want to kill them, right? Kill your son-in-law once in a while. Alright. So maybe that's not an excuse. Vesar el mishmatecha v'nichba deveisecha. Vesar el mishmatecha, interpreted by other Mepharshim, Vesar el mishmatecha, for example, the Radak over here says, El avodotecha klomer shahayin nishma l'chol mitzvotecha. He listens to all of your commandments. Sar el mishmatecha. He listens to everything you tell him to do. As far as I know, David was the most, he was a very obedient soldier. V'nichba v'vesecha, a very honorable person in your house. If we look at the Mesudas David, Mesudas David says, the first line on page 146 in Mesudas David, Ratzel Omar, that is to say, lo b'merida sisizos. Don't think the reason why I gave all these different things to David was because I was rebellious. I wasn't trying to act in any form of being more of a malchus. I would never do such a thing to you, king. So what do you mean? You gave him all these things. I met him, it was on Shabbos. I couldn't believe it. He came by himself, which was not normal, because such a great man like David would come with a whole entourage. And in addition to that, he came on Shabbos. He was Michal Shabbos. He was starving to death. It was strange. But he told me that he had no choice. He had a mission from the king, that he had didn't have a chance to wait. The king ordered him to do something, and he was so meticulous that he was even on Shabbos willing to break the laws. Apparently, it must have been such a serious thing, but that's what David told me, that he went on Shabbos and he was starving. He didn't even take a break, apparently, because he listened to whatever the king said. Kimi mikol avadecha even neman kedavid. I couldn't believe how great of a servant David was. Can you imagine? You listen to your king, great. But not only will you listen to your king, you won't even stop at your local drive-through restaurant for dinner. You just keep driving on 95. Just hope your car doesn't run out of gas. You just keep on trucking. And that's what David did. I was like, wow, this guy's amazing. He doesn't even think about his own welfare and caring about himself. He came in starving to death because that's how much he always listened to you, the king. So you think for a moment that out of possibly a thought that you wanted to kill him, he seemed to be the most trustworthy, most loyal servant you could ever have. Pasuk Tezbav. Hayom hachi lo yisi lishol lo belukim. Is it today? This is most, the Radak says this is like a rhetorical question. Today was the beginning, the first time that he began to ask to God. It was the first time that he ever used the Urim Batumim. This is, you know, he has frequent flyer miles in my place. He comes here all the time. Khalilili. God forbid for anyone to think other than that. Al Yosim HaMelech Ba'avdo Dabar B'chol Beis Aviv. King, do not place into your servant any matter which is Beis Aviv, my father's house. Ki lo yada avdecha b'chol zos davar katan ogado. I would never do anything which would go against the commandment of the king. Katan ogado, small or large. In other words, if I would have known that he did anything wrong, I definitely would have turned him in. I definitely would have helped him. Fact is, I always knew him. He had a great track record. So I have to assume that he did something wrong. No one told me otherwise. As far as I know, he was someone that you really cared about. So what do you want me to do? Every single day that I have to keep calling up references? Like you have an employee, a great employee, someone that comes every day, is a terrific person. So do you have to do a background check on that person every single day just to see maybe from the time they left work until the next morning, maybe they broke the law, maybe they're under arrest? How am I supposed to just assume that he was doing everything fine?
Now, but why is the creed different? Does it have any other meaning other than, you know, what?
It looks like Shaul.
That's why I'm asking. Does it have another meaning?
I didn't see anything. Well, Shaul, that's how you spell it with a vav. That's his name.
Yeah.
So how else could, let's say we would read it the way it's actually written. Hayom hachilosi with Shaul lo belkim, today is the beginning for Shaul to be to Hashem. I'm not exactly sure how you can translate it.
I'm not sure why, you know, it's changed.
How did these creed things happen? Was it a mistake?
No, and the question is why.
Right. Well, sometimes we have good reasons for it. We're going to be seeing, for example, in Pasuk Yud Chet, we're going to see that Doeg's name is changed. And it's written one way and it's read one way. And we mentioned last week that if you see that, you can see where it says Doeg. That's how you're supposed to read it. But Doeg is written here with a Vav Yud instead of Vav Aleph. So we mentioned last week that the Vav Yud could be a woe. Vey, right? Oy vey, a woe. That his name was changed from Doeg. The commentators mentioned that Doeg means concerned, worried, right? Which means that Hashem was Doeg. Hashem looked at him and was worried. He has the potential to do such damage. He has the potential to wipe out an entire city of innocent priests. I'm so concerned, I'm so worried that he may end up doing that. And when we get to Pasuk Yud Chet, we're going to see he ends up doing exactly that. He ends up being the vehicle for the entire city of the Kohanim of Noah being wiped out. And when Hashem actually saw that transpire, he was no longer worried because it happened. Instead, Hashem says, "Vey, woe is it that it happened?" So we do see this, there are certain mefarshim that pick up on the way it's written and read. So they're really, the way it's done that way, the answer to why always has to be that it's read in a specific way to teach us one lesson. It's written in a more hidden manner to tell us a second lesson. But in this example, I'm not sure the answer to why it's done that way.
Begins the question, Shaul. At that point, the Kohen Gadol is beginning to question the king. There's a lunatic there in front of him.
Shaul probably is talking about him himself. So that would be a way you'd have to somehow interpret this verse. But it needs work. Every single time it's done that way. I mean, basically the way the Mefarshim operate is that when you have something written and read differently, they ask themselves the question why, and then they dig a little bit deeper in their research, and then they come up with hopefully a logical explanation. So sometimes it's not so clear. This one, you know, not. I'm sure there are Mefarshim to speak, but I didn't see. Anyway, but that could certainly be a very good answer. All right, so that was Pasuk Tet Vav. If we look at Rashi, which is the last line in Pasuk Tet Vav, Chalilili Ma'asos Davar Zeh Lemored Umo'al. God forbid that I would do something to rebel or to do some form of treachery against you, Almighty King. I wouldn't do it. I didn't mean to do it. And in fact, now that I'm armed with this information, if he comes back, I can guarantee you I'll turn him in. You know, don't worry about it. I'll definitely will never let this happen again. And the king says, you're right. You will never let it happen again. And the reason why is you're going to be killed. V'yomer ha-melech mos tomus Achimelech. Achimelech, that was a beautiful, beautiful plea. It was unbelievable. You should win an Oscar. But unfortunately, you're going to die. Not only you, atah v'chol beis avicha, the entire house of your fathers. Because after all, you're considered to be an accomplice. It's not enough that you gave the bread, you gave a sword. There's a bunch of Kohanim hanging out there, and they saw what was going on, and you were sticking up for this David character. You knew that he was wanted, and everyone else did. So the fact that you gave it to him, you're going to be killed. And the fact that everyone watched you give it, and they didn't complain, they didn't put up a fight, they didn't say not a word, they're also held equally responsible. And therefore, they're going to be killed just the same. They'll be killed too. That's what he said. And when you're the king, you can basically get away with anything. And we're going to now see, once it's been sentenced, the verdict of death on this entire city, all you need to do is one thing. Figure out who's going to carry out the sentence. The king's not going to bloody his hands, not going to go over there and kill all these innocent priests. So he has to find someone who's cowardly enough to do it. Pasuk Yud Zayin. V'yomer ha-melech l'ratzim ha-nitzavim alav. So the king said to the ratzim nitzavim alav, those who stand in front of him. Mesudas Sion says ratzim is ha-ratzim raglai, those people who are on their feet. Lifnei Markavoto, who run in front of him, they're considered to be like footmen that walk and run in front of the king's chariot. So he said to his bodyguards, Sovu Hamisu, gather around and kill them. The Sudas Sion translated is, Sovu Mipo, Lelechas Hamisim, basically get out of where you are now and wipe out them. Who's them? Pasuk says, the Kohani Hashem. Go ahead and destroy, kill all these innocent priests of God. Ki gam yadam im David. I know that their hands are with David. They are willing to support him in any way that they can. V'chi yadu ki bireachu. They knew that he was running. V'lugolu es azni. And it was not revealed to my ears. No one told me about it at all. They should have. And the fact is that since you didn't tell me that he was in your city, you're held responsible. All the servants, all the very trusted servants that would do anything for the king, they heard this and they're like, what do you want us to do? Go to a city of innocent priests and just kill them? A city that only had one sword, and now there's not even a single sword. They're completely defenseless. They would never do anything. They never have any intention to harm anyone. I'm not. V'lo avo avdi ha-melech l'shloch es yadam. No person wished to go there to stretch out their hands with goa b'kohani Hashem. If goa, as the Mesudas Sion says, inyan makos mavos. None of them wanted to hit them with the powerful blow of death to these priests of God. No way. Not a single person volunteered for this job. If you look at Rashi over here, L'ratzim ha-nitzavim alav, So we're going to see that the people that would run in front, these footmen who would walk, run in front of the king, their names are Abner, the Emsah. These two individuals, those were the two people he was really speaking to. And they themselves did not want to listen to the king. And the Mefarshim deal with how they had a right to disagree with him. But nonetheless, they were unwilling to kill innocent people. So
basically, those two people that he's talking to that he wanted to do the job to in number? That's what it says?
Yeah, it's
that's why I asked the question, because of who does kill him and how did he kill all those people? That's why I asked the question.
It seems like only
those two people,
right now those two people were asked to kill them, or at least they'll be in charge. Maybe they'll have people under them that they would instruct.
In the English it says, according to the sages, Saul issued his order to Abner and Amasa, the commanders of his army.
Yeah, Abner was a commander of his army.
Right. No, so obviously they weren't going to do it themselves. And they
right.
Delegate.
Right.
Well, next one, they
but they didn't feel that they even wanted to be take part of it at all, to accept that command. Well, that's why we're saying that they probably delegated. Right, it wasn't just that. Plus, it's also not a big deal. Again, it's not 85 armed soldiers. There are 85. You go into a sanctuary. There were innocent people. They didn't have any weapons. You just walk in there and kill them. You know, it's nothing.
The interesting thing is that he's so paranoid. How is it that he's going with only three bodyguards?
No, but she's saying that they have a whole army.
That's why he doesn't. He had to be with more than
right.
three people.
But these are the most. These are you know.
These are the chief.
Right. Okay. Pasuk Yud-Chet. Well, no one for some reason was willing to accept this responsibility, this command. So therefore, the king said, "Well, are there any volunteers in the room? And if no one volunteers, guess what we do? We pick you." V'yomer HaMelech, and here's the name change, L'Doeg. So the king said to Doeg, "Sov ata, why don't you go? Ufog about Kohanim. Ufog, as we saw before in the Mishnah Nesiyon, and you go and hit and kill the Kohanim. Why don't you do it?" V'yitzov Doeg, Vadomi. So Doeg didn't argue, and he got up. V'yifgan, who but Kohanim? He went and he smote the Kohanim. V'yomes v'yomahu shmonim v'chamisha ish, nosei ephod bad. He smote 85 Kohanim, those who wore the ephod, this special garment, this it's translated as linen robes. And the question with ephod, when it comes to the difference between a high priest, a Kohen Gadol, and a Kohen Hedget, Kohen Hedget wears four simple garments, right? And basically, a hat, belt, pants, and a shirt. When it comes to the Kohen Gadol, he wears eight garments. The extra garments, the choshen, he wears the me'il, he wears the tzitz, this headband, and finally, the ephod. The question is, how many people who are Kohen Gadol? Not 85, but it says that he killed 85 people who wore the ephod. What do you mean? There's not 85 people who are the Kohen Gadol. So if you look at the Radak, start off with the Radak, Noise ephod bad, right? In Pasuk Yud-Chet, which is the fourth wide line, it says Noise ephod bad. Kitargamo, skip those few words, and then it says Nero le Pirusho. It seems the way to explain these words, Ki harag Yosef mishmone mechamisha. There wasn't only 85 people in the whole city, right? This is one some little hick town, right? There was more than 85 people in that city. Abel mishmone mechamisha, how you roin lilbosh ephod. 85 of them were in such a great level. They were just Kohanim. I shouldn't say just. They were just Kohanim. But they were on such a great level that each of them could have been accepted to have been the Kohen Gadol. They were on that level, that madrega of spirituality. So when it says he killed 85, he didn't really kill 85. He killed, wiped out the whole city, right? They obviously had families. It doesn't imply that he, it says that he wiped out the whole city. And in fact, when Shaul said to Achimelech, he said, "I'm going to kill you, the whole Beit Avicha, your entire father's house." Doesn't seem to show any signs of compassion of Rachmanis whatsoever. And this is what it means, that he didn't just kill 85, he obviously killed a whole lot more than just that. When we look at Rashi, Rashi tells us the reason why Nishtana Shemo, his name was changed, and this I'm not really sure if I understand these next three words, but I'll read them anyway. Omar Lo, he said to him, that the king said to Doeg, he said the reason why his name was changed from Doeg with a to a different letters is Nispeses Kedog. You have been grabbed like a fish, which I guess means I'm grabbing you like a fish. You stick a little worm on a hook and you stick into the sea and pop, there goes your fish stuck on. So I'm going to grab you just like I'm going to go fishing. I'm just going to grab you just like a fish. Ata hishalachta lehem, ata haragosam. You're the one that were sent out words against them, so you are going to kill them. You started the whole thing. You slayed them, so to speak, with your tongue. So now you're going to end up finishing the job. So he said, it's not because you spoke lashon hara. It's not like, oh, you're such a great guy, your job is finished. Since you started the problem, you're going to finish the problem. Since you're the one that acknowledged the fact that they made a mistake, you're the one that thinks they're rebellious and no one else saw it, you're going to kill them. And we actually find this also in the Torah. When it comes to the Eidim, when it comes to witnesses that notice that someone committed a crime, the Torah actually tells us that we ask them to witness the sentencing. We see this also when it comes to a person who's sentenced to death in the United States. Like, you have a nice little audience that watches the execution. But the idea behind it, perhaps, is that when you see a crime committed, we need for you to be able to also witness the punishment that's attached to it. Because if you see a crime and you don't see the punishment, that may inspire you also to start committing crimes. Like, oh, that sounds like a great idea. Look at all these breaking this rule, break that rule, and it'll be great for me. Those are the people that need to see the crime. But according to the simple explanation of Rashi, the fact that you spoke ill against this nation, this city, you're going to end up also having to do the killing as well.
I don't know about anybody else, but I think this is a really tough thing to understand nevertheless.
What's that?
I'm surprised there aren't more deeper, kind of...
That
what? The whole attitude.
That nobody stopped them, that just they do this, that they didn't do any self-discipline.
That Hashem didn't interfere.
That Hashem didn't interfere.
Let's talk about that.
The words...
We always dug
it. Running, hiding.
He was still hiding.
This is what he did. This is one of the darkest stories in the Navi. It's obviously not a very exciting. It's terrible. It's devastating. It's tragic. He felt that they were Morid B'Malchus. He felt that they were rebelling against the king.
He says to the two people who are supposed to be Jews who would go to the Kohanim, Sovu, turn around and kill the Kohanim. It's turn against. Mm. He's telling them, and they won't. Because they have a connection with the Kohanim, they will not Sovu. Yet when he says it to Doeg, he...
Vayisov.
He did it.
He to begin with has turned.
Right.
He's the one who perpetrated this whole thing.
Right.
So for him to turn was no big deal. While...
But
Doeg...
Which Doeg...
Way of putting it. That's very interesting.
Doeg also went, how did he know this whole thing happened? How did he know that David was given food and a sword? Because he was there praying in Nob.
What?
He wasn't, he was actually, that's what it the
but
whole
he
story.
Me.
What?
No, not really.
But he went there, and he was
Jewish,
engaged in learning.
He was Jewish.
It says Doeg.
So there's different explanations. Edom red, he was a killer, he violent.
Edomite.
Some interpret, that could be the simple explanation. But,
right.
Some say that's the reason why, because he was attacking David. He was out to get David, who was considered to be also red. That's different explanations of why he's called Doeg Edomi. But Doeg was a person that went there to be spiritually...
He was
elevated.
So he
turned around, right? You're saying he did a 180, but no one else was willing to do. What was that?
Does David have Doeg killed when he becomes king?
We're gonna have to see when it gets to it. Right? I can't reveal all the secrets, or else he'll never come back. All right, let's move on to the next pasuk. Pasuk Yud-Tet. Want to finish the parak today? Pasuk Yud-Tet. V'eis nov ir hakohanim hiko lefi cherev, the sword. Well, here we go. This pasuk is as clear as it gets. It's probably, this would be a nice pasuk to skip because it's a sickening pasuk. But nonetheless, we have to read it. It's what it says. Nov, the city of Kohanim, he smote with the sword. Who did he kill? Just the Kohanim? No. Me'ish, v'yad isha, men and women. Me'olel v'yad yonik, little infants, little nursing children. V'shor v'chamor v'sel v'icharet, oxen, donkeys, sheep. He just wiped out every single possible thing.
Did he do that
from the city?
That's what it says. That he did single-handedly.
That's what it sounds. Maybe he had people that he commanded. So the people that he commanded, are they held responsible, or are they just taking orders?
Though he was not. It was no
commander. Maybe he just asked.
He was
supposed to come.
Yeah.
It says,
yeah,
whatever.
Amalek.
Right.
Amalek, he didn't kill all.
Oh, we're
going to
get to that.
That's going to be
the next. Look at the Radak. The Radak says like this in Pasuk Yud-Tet. Me'ish v'yad isha. The Radak says in Pasuk Yud-Tet. Dar Shabbat says in Tractate Yoma. B'dvar Amalek sim. When it came to him looking at Amalek. Remember we said he was thinking about the valley. He was thinking about all these different excuses not to kill them. B'yachmol shol v'am. He had such compassion on this nation. He felt so torn. Al metav hatzon. I have to kill a sheep? Why would... And that's always... I have to kill animals. I have to kill children. How could I... They're innocent. Okay, a Moloch. They're not... They weren't nice to us. Okay, I can understand killing out the soldiers, the men. Why should I have to wipe out the animals? It's wrong. It's terrible. I'm such a compassionate man. I'm such a great person. I can't bring myself to kill these people. Yatzabaskol, a heavenly voice came out to him then. The Amrlo, and they said, Al tit tzadik harbi. Don't think you're such a great guy. Don't be such a big tzadik. To accept upon yourself what appears to be as a chumrah. I'm going to be strict, and I'm not going to kill everyone. I can't do such a thing. Al tit tzadik harbi. As it says in Ecclesiastes, don't be such a righteous person. However, doing a 180, but when it comes to Novir HaKohanim, what did he say when it came to a city, not of a fill of a Malekim, people who were backstabbers and terrorists, who were the people in Nov? They're Kohanim, innocent, holy, spiritual priests. Ksiv, and what did he say? Kill them out, and they were killed. Animals, every animal was wiped out. Innocent infants, toddlers, killed. Yatzabaskol, and the voice came out. The Amrlo, and it said, Al tirsha harbe. Don't be overly wicked. Which means, just like you shouldn't be overly righteous, you cannot be overly wicked. You have to be able to find a balance in life. Right, as we mentioned in the Perkei Avot class, lo sasser yom nu small. Don't go too far to the right. Don't go too far to the left. It's not okay when it comes to the Torah law. That's what we're going to see in the Radak. There's more, but that's all. When it comes to Torah law, you can't go too far to the left and say, I'm going to break all the laws. You have to adhere to the mitzvot. But if you start going over the top, strict, that's also not good. You have to be able to find some level of balance. And the fact that you look at the Torah and say, this makes sense, this doesn't make sense, once you start making up your own rules, and say, I'm not going to do X, and I'm going to do more, just as easily tomorrow you're going to end up doing less. We mentioned a couple weeks ago also the story about the Rosh Hashiva Rav Shlomo Zissel, who lived in Kelm. We talked about there's a cash box, and all of his students would, instead of having to go to the manager, put money in there. So the manager came up to him and said, this is so great, your students are so righteous, such great people, they put in more money than it really costs. They did an inventory, and they're spending more money than they really should because they're so honest. So he got very upset. So why are you upset? Why would you be upset? He said, because if today they're giving more, then tomorrow they're going to end up just walking in your store and taking, and they're going to justify what they did yesterday and taking and stealing from you. So once a person starts doing more than they should, it justifies that there's no rules at all, and therefore inadvertently they'll end up doing less. Same thing over here.
That, you know, in English
yeah.
It says, the one who is merciful to wicked people, who is cruel to good people, I don't know.
That applies today.
Yeah.
The world that left is crying out about torture of prisoners, and then everlasting, they don't care what happens to good people, like in Israel and this country.
But and even Hess, the Nazi, he used to cover his bird's cage. Not to disturb him, but I did a lot.
It was a nice thing.
He was a sacrifice. And also they banned chicken because that was cruel, right?
Right.
But in the English, in 18, it talks about doing a vicious slanderer, a mass murderer, with his tongue and with his sword. He was so powerful physically, he single-handedly was able to murder so many.
Oh.
But the part that gets me, the middle letters, guys, you said, spell the word woe, expressing God's anguish that such a great scholar could have degenerated so abysmally. I mean, then you have to say, was there another hand that, I don't know. I find it very troubling.
That such a great person could fall so far?
No, that he could fall so far, that Hashem says that he's such a great scholar and he degenerated so abysmally, does that mean Yad Hashem is not in this at all? That's what I think.
But we have Bechira, we have free will. You know, anyone could do anything they want. I mean, it's hard to understand exactly. Hashem is in control of this world, but at the same time, we on our individual level could do something destructive.
We're reading about Shaul, who started so good, then this is what he will power corrupt.
Right.
Where is Shmuel?
Shmuel is back at home. But he'll pop up again. All right, we have a couple more psukim. Let's just go through it, so we'll finish. The Amalek ben Echad la'Achimelech ben Achitub. Fortunately, at least one person was spared from among all these Kohanim. Ushmo Eviasar. His name was Eviasar v'Yivrach Achrei David. So he ran to David. Eviasar is brought down. Right. And what is the first two letters? Av. So among all of the fathers, there was Yeter, remained this one guy. And it's brought down. And if it would have happened that if Eviatar was not remained, if he was not spared, then that would have been it for the Kohanim. That he was the last of them. What?
What about Abner and the others,
or if you
used to do this?
Okay. Pasuk Chafal. So Eviatar ran to David, and he said, Ki harag Shaul es Kohani Hashem. He wanted to inform him what Shaul did to the Kohanim. Yomer David le'Eviatar. Listen, unbelievable responsibility that David accepts upon himself. He turns to him and says, Yodati, I know, b'yom ahu, on this day, I knew it was going to happen. Because I saw when I was in Nova, starving to death, and I needed food, but I looked through the corner of my eye, and I noticed this guy Doeg over there. I knew Ki Hagid Yagid L'Shal. I knew he was going to do this. He was going to tell the king. And I knew it. I knew it was going to happen. Anochi Sabosi B'chol Nefesh Beit Avicha. I considered myself to be held responsible for your entire family's home.
He looked at the same.
boasting or responsible. That's why I'd like to
focus on that. That's what it says, responsible.
I know,
yeah.
Well, I mean, if you look at the Mesudas David, Anochi's, right, in this, Anochi Saboti, it says the last, at least the last four words of Mesudas David, Ba'al Yadi Ba'a Hatakala, through me this problem came about. And they said, because I could have taken the bread, but maybe I shouldn't have taken the sword. If I didn't take the sword, they wouldn't have said that I was rebelling against them. So he accepted upon himself this responsibility.
But the word,
if you go to visit someone, I turned, instead of going to pray, I stopped someone, I came to visit, I came to someone's house.
So, what's it got to do with responsibility?
Because he went in there and he asked for food, he's responsible to
I'm not sure if it could, if you want to use that word,
I don't want to use that,
you can say I turned my back on them. Like I turned away from them, and I knew that they were going to get killed, and it's almost like I ignored them, which is, it was my fault that I turned against them. Something like that. Let's see the last pasuk on page 148. We'll stop. So how does David respond to this guy? I mean, I don't want this guy hanging out with me. He's wanted dead or alive. Truth is, so am I. Shiva iti, hang out with me. Altira, don't be so scared anymore. Ki asher yavakish nafshi, yavakish nafshecha. Just as the guy wants to kill me, you know, you're in good company or bad company. He wants to kill you too. Ki mishmeres ata yimadi. You'll be safe and protected from me. The Radak here says, on the top of Pasachav Gimel, which where we'll stop, Shohu Shemavakish is Nafshi, you know that the king wants to kill me. Look at me, am I dead? I'm still alive, I'm doing okay. Umavakish is Nafshecha, he now also wants to kill you. L'chin Shalo Iti, and therefore, because of this, why don't we stay together?